really getting clear on what's most important in your life and family and connections and experience and all those things that you can't necessarily put down on a ledger when you're looking at money, but the money is something that can help support those things and you can decide what's most important to you. Are you willing to sacrifice here in order to create more over in this other area?
I'm Stephen Pesavento and welcome to the Name Your Number podcast presented by The Investor Mindset. As someone who comes from a challenging childhood, I've spent my life seeking financial security, personal growth, and ultimately freedom. The freedom to not wake up worried about the next paycheck, but rather with the confidence of knowing that my passive income pays my bills without the need to think about it. When you name your number that you'll earn passively, that creates your ultimate quality of life, then I believe you've achieved real freedom. Welcome to my show. It's time to name your number.
How are you doing today, Ken?
Hello, Stephen. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm super happy for you to be here. I'm recording this from Denver and you're in Tokyo, Japan. And you're the author of Happy Money, the Japanese art of making peace with your money. And what I'm excited about to talk with you today is you've got a different perspective on money. It's really unique, yet I think extremely powerful. So before we get into all of the amazing stuff you've learned and you've been teaching millions of people all around the world, tell me, when you look back at your childhood, what events or influences shaped most who you are today?
My father was a very successful tax accountant, so he started teaching me about money since I was 5 or 6. So that education was very helpful. Because money is such a taboo topic everywhere you go. And I've been going around the world for like 3 or 4 times by now. And then everywhere I go, money is taboo. So It was so good that my father started teaching me about money IQ stuff. But at the same time, when I was 9 or 10, probably a little younger than that, I came home from school one day and my father was crying like a baby, and he was a macho guy, you know, karate master. And my mother took me aside and she said, my dad's client committed suicide. And not only he committed suicide, he killed the entire family of 4 and then committed suicide. That's the first time I learned the term family suicide. And later, what I found out is that my father advised his client slash his best friend to file bankruptcy. And he had some money ready for to give or loans to his friend. But he didn't tell that to him. So his client was desperate for money, and then he killed himself before going to the shame of bankruptcy. And later on, he got into depression. And then even though we had money, we were very unhappy. My father got abusive. So for me, my quest for money or the knowledge, quest for knowledge around money started when I was 10 or 11, very early on. And then I wanted to read every book I could have touched my hands on. And then I started investing when I was 20, and I became financially independent when I was 29. So all my life, money was a fascinating subject.
Yeah, it's wild, as much as I've talked with so many people from so many different cultures, that one of the things that I noticed the most is that pain is such a huge driver of motivating people to go and look for answers. I know I had totally different experiences, but pain that really drove me to thinking, hey, well, how do I be happy? How do I live a good life? How do I make money? How do I get out of this difficulty that I'm experiencing in my youth? And it sounds like you were drawn from very different circumstances to kind of go down that path. And so something that's unique to you is you are both very focused on Zen beliefs, and yet you're teaching people about money. And so what is this Zen approach to money?
So I realized as I grew and became successful, there are two kinds of wealthy people: very happy wealthy people and very unhappy wealthy people. As you know, Stephen, you must have met a lot of them, right? And the people who have a lot of money and still manage to stay happy, they are very different. And I realized that it's because they're abundant insight too. So I became a student to many Zen masters and also wealthy people who understand the happiness and the essence of life. So I realized that there are two kinds of money intelligence: money IQ, money EQ. In the West, a lot of teachers seems to teach money IQ, like Robert Kiyosaki and other great teachers. Mm-hmm. I shared the same stage with Robert a few months ago in Singapore, and he's a money IQ person. They teach investment and real estate, stocks, tax laws, and all that kind of thing. That's very important. And at the same time, I know, and I'm sure all the viewers have seen, very, very smart people, financially savvy people, lose everything because they make stupid mistakes emotionally. So that means if you don't have high money EQ, you could end up losing everything because you could leverage high and then risk all the investment and then lose, you know, because you want to be bigger, you want to earn more. And then this drive is sometimes clouding people's judgment. So money EQ is very important. And that's what Zen stuff comes in.
It's fascinating because, you know, I run an investment firm. We invest in private equity, and I always talk with people about where they're at and how they're thinking. And it's so important to understand the strategy, the techniques, i.e. the money IQ behind what is actually happening and how to use your money and these kind of things. But if you don't have a good emotional relationship with money, it can drive you to make really poor decisions, like rush out of the market when it's the wrong time or not go into the market when it is the right time. So yes. How does money EQ play a role, and how can you learn to be able to connect better and have a better relationship with it?
So I've interviewed many happy millionaires, and I realized that they know that these four principles. I'll explain very briefly. The first principle is receive. You know, we receive money. You know, we don't make money. We receive money. So when you change this mindset, it'll be totally different. The second one is appreciate. You know, appreciate money coming in. They chose you out of 10 other coaches and consultants. So that means that there are so many reasons to appreciate the money for coming in. The third principle is trust. If you can trust, you can feel happy. But if you don't have the trust, you stay constantly worried. The fourth is share. A lot of millionaires and billionaires donate money because they understand sharing is a key to happiness. So there is this confusion, you know, money IQ teaches you to expand, grow, and at the same time, money EQ teaches you to share. So, but think about this, you know, in order to be a happy person, you are supposed to engage in productive thing like work. But at the same time, you need to be engaged in non-productive part of your life, you know, family time or friends time or downtime. And it cannot be, you cannot measure your quality time by money. You know, I retired for my baby girl for 4 years. People thought it's crazy, but that is the best decision I've ever made, because that 4 years of just concentrating for my baby girl with my wife, you know, you cannot buy back the time. So like time is also another asset that you can see. And I teach people visible asset, invisible asset, but people tend to ignore the importance of invisible asset, because that is something when you hit your 80s and 90s, you don't calculate how much you have. It's about the memories that count in a nursing home. So you have to have the both IQ and EQ.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I see your four, share, trust, appreciate, and receive, when I hear those, I think to myself, wow, that's such a beautiful way to be experiencing money, while yet so many of us, so many people these days are stuck in this place of fear where they're worried, they have to go out and get more, they're greedy. They're not sure if someone else is going to take advantage of them because they themselves are thinking of taking advantage of others. And it just creates this really negative energy around money. And what have you found is one of the best ways to correct that energy, that relationship with money, so that you can get it into a position where it starts flowing to you instead of all the resistance of you pushing to try to get it?
Thank you, Stephen. That's a great question. I love that. So I think the key is appreciation. What do you appreciate? Appreciate. If you appreciate your clients, you get more clients. Many years ago, I divided my clients into two groups. The one I appreciated for the business, I brought some a little tea, book, and something. And the second group, I did nothing, just the regular work. 6 months later, boom, I got so many referrals from the group one that I kept constantly showing my appreciation. So whatever you appreciate, your friendship, and then you have more friends. If you appreciate your partner, your kids more, they appreciate you back. So appreciation is really the key, but we forget because we are so preoccupied to getting more, doing more, and then needing more. And that leads to unhappiness and at least unsatisfaction. So you have to be content with what you have. And of course, you can do more, but instead of like, I need more, out of entitlement. But the attitude could be, I'm so happy with whatever I have, and I don't mind receiving more. And if your attitude is like that, you don't have to be so greedy.
What a powerful way to experience money. What's so fascinating, and I say this for myself as much as the listeners, it's so fascinating that when you change your relationship with money, when you change your relationship with how you look at it, in that process of changing these habits and beliefs, it's actually leading you down a path towards changing your habits and beliefs in a variety of other areas of your life.
Exactly. So because money touches every area of our life. So if you can improve your relationship with the money, you feel better about yourself. You feel so relaxed, because you always feel, and I have more than enough. My mentor used to say, I have more than enough. That's why I'm sharing this. I have more than enough. I'm so blessed. So Happy Millionaire's habitual saying is, oh gosh, I'm so wealthy. I don't know. I cannot spend all the money for the rest of my life. So the feeling that I have more than enough gives you just a freedom and also peace of mind. So and you can be more generous. And so I hope you become financially independent somewhere in the course of your life. I achieved it in my 20s. Some people achieve it in the 30s or 40s or 50s. But if you can do it early, the rest of your life, work can be fun because you have a choice. You don't have to work, or you can't work, But if you have to work, keep working to bring food on the table, your work and life could be very miserable.
Yeah, it's so fascinating because for so long, I very much was climbing the first mountain of success, came from not a lot, got myself into a position where I grinded myself away, put hundreds of hours into work every single week, trying to make things happen. And I grew a business and I grew wealth, but I was always stuck in this place and it wasn't the best or happiest energy. And the irony is that in one of my darkest moments, I lost a loved one, a sibling, a little sister of mine. And in that process, it pulled me out of the moment of realizing, wow, there's so much more to life than this stuff that I've spent my time on. And yet, in that process, it led me to realizing that you know, I'm already financially abundant. I don't need more, but if more comes, phenomenal. And mm-hmm. that perspective shift actually leads you, or led me personally, towards just feeling so much better about what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And I think so oftentimes it's those difficult moments that we have to experience. And I wish people didn't have to, that they could just receive the message from someone like you to be inspired mm-hmm. to change.
Yes. So the key is it doesn't really matter how much you have or how much money you make. You can be such a happy person if you, as long as you can pay all the bills. You know, so there is a minimum, I think. But you don't have to go to become billionaires. You know, you can be very happy with where you are if you can pay all the bills and if you can do whatever you want. That is like the first goal. And then after that, if you want to have fancy things, that's fine too.
Yeah, I think it's really easy because, you know, social media and seeing so many other people get caught into this trap of comparison and consumerism, thinking, oh, well, I need all of these things, or what I have isn't good enough. That person has more. And yet it's difficult to break free from that. But when you do, you're in a much happier place. What do you recommend, and what have you seen work well for all the folks that you've worked with when it comes to breaking that comparison trap that people fall into?
I think the feeling of how much is enough, you know, like, well, this is enough. So that's my habitual saying, wow, this is more than enough, you know, like the food and the, you know, the house. I have a few houses and I'm very happy with one, or I'm happy with a tiny one. You know, many years ago, I wanted to try how it feels to become, you know, the super wealthy people. So when we were in Boston, we rented a place, 5-acre house and 17 rooms. And I wanted to have 2-year experience of being a billionaire. Oh. And then we had 17 rooms, but we ended up using only 2 rooms, you know, because if we are just scattered, we got lonely. And so I realized that, you know, in Tokyo, we shouldn't get that big apartment, you know. And then I have a big one outside of Tokyo. But you don't need to be own a big house if you want to be happy. So you really have to know how much is enough for now, because everyone is born with a money container. You know, some people born with a big container, like Bill Gates, Elon Musk, and some people are born with a small one. If you want to be a school teacher, if you want to be a nurse, your money container is not so big. So if that's your path, you know, be willing to accept it. You know, this life, you're not going to become a millionaire, a billionaire, but it's okay, because I do what I do enjoy what I do. So instead of just feeling like I have to do more, I have to get more, like fill your cup first. And if your cup is full, then you figure out.
Yeah, no, I love that, because it's something that I teach to people, which is really getting clear on what's most important in your life, and family and connections and experience and all those things that you can't necessarily put down on a ledger when you're looking at money. But the money is something that can help support those things, and you can decide what's most important to you. Are you willing to sacrifice here in order to create more over in this other area? And when you can get clear on that, it puts you in a position to feel like you have some influence and authority over your life.
Exactly. So you have to figure out how much you need. You may need a $50,000 income if you live in outside of big cities. But if you live in New York or Tokyo, you need to have probably more. So you have to figure out. And also, my national bestseller in Japan is that the title of the book is Do What You Love and Make Sure Money Follows You. So the key is to do what you love. At the same time, make sure you're supported financially. Even though I'm regarded as a money EQ teacher in English, you know, I used to teach financial independence many years ago, but I got kind of bored because it's sort of boring, and it's the same thing. You have to have a tactics and then you keep following that. But you really have to have both, you know. So as much as I teach money EQ, because there are not many other good teachers in this field in English world, so I'm focusing on that. But at the same time, you have to have a solid financial base to be happy. So I'm not teaching people, you can be happy without money. You need money. You need to pay bills, you know. But don't focus. Don't get hooked up with money.
Yeah. Well, I think these are some beautiful things. And I mean, there's so much that I want to go into. What I'm curious about, you know, the perspective of thinking about money from this better place, the having better energy, attracting things to you, letting it flow. I love all of it. I feel like we could talk for hours on all of it.
Yes.
What I'm curious about from your perspective, Ken, you reached financial independence at a young age. We share that in common. Yet I'm not exactly clear on exactly how you did it. I know you were doing some business, you were doing some other things. What's your perspective on how to go about creating financial independence? How did you do it? And then what role did investing play in that?
So, you know, I was lucky that the time was pretty good for the stock market and other things. So as a few of your guests were talking about, there are many routes. You know, you take the routes of saving, cutting up your credit cards and just start saving. It takes a long time. So if you want to take the shortcut route, you have to take some risk. And the risk you have to take is investment risk and also business risk. You have to start your business. And if you just start your business, do you want to borrow other people's money, or you just use your own money? So there are many different routes. So if you want to go in a shorter time, you have to go higher, and the angle will be pretty sharp. So it takes only 2 years to find out to achieve financial independence. And if you want to take the long-term one, you might need 20 years to climb the mountain. You can do it as you teach at school and get paid very little. Still, you can achieve financial independence if you do it right in two decades or three decades. So I did the combination of entrepreneurship and also investing. And also I was a good marketer. You know, I applied the skill to book selling. You know, that's why I sold about 9 million copies of my books by word of mouth. So you need to combine the skill sets. And it's almost like, think of a small boat. If you have just one engine, you know, salary, slow. But if you have an investment and also you have entrepreneurs, if you have like four big engines, it goes very fast. But once again, you know, you have to take your own speed. If you try to go so fast, the boats are going to just jump and then collapse. So I'd advise people to take time and take time. When I was in my 20s, I was in a rush, you know, probably you are too. Like early starter tend to go like, do more. And then I realized at the age 29, like, wow, I just ran a marathon, like a 100-meter thing, very fast. And then I realized I needed to take some time. But taking four years off of my life, I could really focus on what's most important in my life. And after 3 years, what I came up with was impact. Mm-hmm. If I could have some impact to other people or the society or the planet, that is something I want to have for the rest of my life. So I started writing. It's about 22 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I can definitely appreciate that. So it sounds like you did a little bit of blend of business and investing, and then you got to a certain point and you decided to exit. And, you know, what was it that led you to realizing for yourself that it was time to pull the plug on the hustle or the grind or the business? Did you have an exit? Did you sell the business? Did you decide to get rid of all of your investments? What does that look like today? And what did it look like when you first made that jump and made that shift for yourself?
Thank you, Stephen. I love you. You keep asking great questions. Thank you. So my brother became an accountant already. So I sort of, I was the owner. So I had my brother and also other people run my business. So I was, that's, I called semi-retired, you know, at the time, but I didn't have to go to office every day. So I just check in, how are you doing? And he said, fine, thank you. And that's, so that's how, that was my short, you know, time of work. So at the time, I also invested in stock market, and that was a dot-com boom. So all the Yahoo and all the other things just shut up, like what's happened now. So eventually what goes up will go down. So viewers, you know, you gotta be really ready. But so while I was doing it, I asked, when my wife and I found out that, about her pregnancy, I realized, what should we do? So we started visiting our mentors and friends who are older than us. So at the time, like they're in the 40s or 50s or 60s. And I asked them, what do you regret most about your childhood, about your child care? You know, when your child is born, what do you regret for the first few years? And they, I was expecting that they'll say different things, but they said only one thing from many different mouths. They said, I wish I spent more time with my kids. Like, wow. So like, how? No, just spend time. You know, you don't have to do anything special, but just, I wish I physically spent time with my kids. If that is important, if that's, everybody seems to be regretting it, let's do it. But the funny thing is, I thought for 2 months, and my wife thought it's 2 years. Like, and then I thought we were on the same page. I think probably like, you know, this, and then, you know, oh, thank you. So like 2 months, but for her, it's like 2 years. But the funny thing is, after about a year, I started to speak very slow. And my friends worried about me. And then after 2 years, another year. And then we ended up spending 4 years. But about the third year, I started having visions of writing books and teaching things. Like, that was a bizarre vision. And so it took me another year to really start doing what I do now.
I think that's so cool because, you know, it's like this moment in your life, things are going well, you've semi-retired, you've got somebody you trust running the business, it's still creating income for you. And yet you had this life-changing moment happen and you decided to ask the smart people around you, your mentors and your friends, and you actually listened to their advice. If people listening get anything from this interview, I hope it would be that. I hope it would be, okay, what do I want? Why do I want it? What's happening for me? And who can help me understand what they would have done differently? And I'm going to listen.
Yes. Yeah. So one of my special skills is get the best mentors in my field. You know, one of them is Wahid Takeda, who passed away a few years ago. He used to be called Warren Buffett of Japan. He once was a major shareholder of more than 100 public companies in Japan. That means big. And he taught me this Zen philosophy on money. So he's my mentor to shift my view of traditional money into very Zen and like bizarre way. Like, wow, I never thought that that way about money. Like, he kept blowing my mind at least like 1,000 times. And he asked me more questions than I asked him questions. So still today, his questions stay in my mind. That I think that's what good teachers do. So I think getting the great mentors really help you.
And what would you give advice to somebody who's listening and they're saying, hey, I want to go out and get great mentors. What does that take?
And I wrote a book called How to Meet Your Perfect Mentor. It's in Japanese. But from the book, in the book, I said, just, you know, do some research. You can just, these days, there are many teachers talk about that on YouTube. But I think if you are just a regular person, ask around your friends, or their uncle maybe a business owner, their cousins maybe may have 8 restaurants. There are some very nice, very happy, successful people around you. That is the first step. And then if you just become more successful, you probably get to know famous people. And then you just hang around with them. And the more you get to know those people, the more same wavelength that you become. Like one of my mentors is Jack Canfield, and Jack, the Chicken Soup of the Soul. He sold 300 million copies. I thought 9 million is a... my book sales are reaching 10 million. I thought that's a lot of books, but they're like, what? So if you just meet a great mentor in your field, if you're a doctor, you should find a surgeon. If you're a chef, you should find a, you should look for an Iron Chef, in your field. And also potentially other field as well, because mentors in other fields can teach you different things.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I think most people don't realize is that when you go out there and you're curious and you ask questions, there's people around you that you know who can help you move down that path. And when you're humble enough to come and say, hey, this is what I'd like to do, this is what I'm thinking about, what would your advice be for somebody in my situation? And as you execute and take that on, other people see that growth, they build that relationship, and they're happy to be able to give back because they have received that in the past. And if you're willing to receive it, they're happy to give it as long as you're somebody who they believe is actually going to take that advice and it's going to help them help you do something in your life.
Exactly. And I'm sure, Stephen, you have many great mentors, but I think a lot of people who are self-made millionaires, they don't listen and they don't have great mentors. That's why they fail. So emotional intelligence is very important in that sense. I have still great mentors who scold me, criticize me, like, Ken, you're not doing things right. When I hit, my 50s and
great to have that though, right?
Yes. And when I get older, when I become more successful, not many people say something like that, So you have to be really careful. You should have at least 3 or 4 people who criticize you or scold you, including your partner. That's the most important person. But, can you listen to them? Can you accept, can you embrace the criticism or like that when they catch something that you don't, you have to just ask them, what do you see in me? And then you can just correct your course.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so big. It's like if you get the right people around you and they're willing to be honest and tell you maybe what you don't even want to hear, and if you're willing to receive it, even if it's not what's right for you at that moment, but you're willing to do something with it, then great things can happen. Of course, once you start attracting and receiving money in your life, you can make those decisions to start investing it. But for those people who, they're working in a job or they're running a business and there's something that's just not working for them, how can they go about finding their gift or gifts, and how can they then package that up to create value in the world?
That's another great question out there. I teach people how to set up a system so you can start receiving financial stream. You really have to study yourself, like a detective. Like a profile, the FBI profile. I love watching sometimes those videos, like all the detective or FBI agent, just kind of like the criminal would be, the guy would be this, who is in the 30s and 40s. So just think about this, like what kind of gifts I have, like this guy has, he seems to enjoy it more when he travels. He seems to like talking to people. His energy lights up when he reads books or watches nice YouTubes. So when your energy goes up, that's when you're getting closer to your talents and gifts. So You have to start exploring what you're good at. What people say, wow, Stephen, you're so good at listening or interviewing. And if more than two people mention that, that's definitely your gift. And the key is to combine those gifts. You know, you cannot play with only one gift. You know, for me, I'm good at writing, I'm good at speaking, I'm good at interviewing, and I'm good at making jokes. And I make jokes all the time around money because it's so funny. I didn't talk about that but there's so many funny stories around money because people are so serious, especially the couple. I used to do a couple counseling. But anyway, so my stage is a lot of laughter, a lot of crying, a lot of hugging, because money brings out the best and the worst in you. So I combine all that. It's almost like an art. So, and then you can create your own world. Like I create my Ken Honda world. It's a lot of healing around money. Not many money teachers do healing, right, around money. So you just should create your own blue ocean, you know. Don't fight where everybody's fighting.
And that's what's so powerful about this idea of recognizing you don't have to be the best in the world at one thing. But if you take two or three or four or many gifts and you package them together, that can be your gift. And there's something that really spoke to me about your work in the idea that you're healing people's beliefs around money, because it really resonates with me personally, because out in this world that I live in the United States, most people are very logic driven. They're very, I'm going to go to the doctor and they're going to tell me to take a medicine. And yet, as I've done some of my own work and dealt with different health issues, the more that I've connected to that idea of being healed, both through the work, through psychology, through magical healers and people who can do some interesting things, it's very interesting. And when you recognize that your beliefs are actually as toxic as any of the things that you're putting into your body, and when you can heal those beliefs, it actually frees you to live a life that you love.
Exactly. I totally agree with you.
So when you're working with somebody, right, they're at one of your workshops, you're live in person, you're talking, you're joking, you're playing, you're bringing this energy around money. What is an example of a change that somebody can have once they start stepping into that belief system, that Zen belief of happy money?
So a lot of people realize, like, wow, I never thought I had more than enough, you know, because before they focus on the lack, they have a hard time paying the bills, they feel worried constantly, and then they fight with their wife and husband, and they just worry about the job, if they can keep the job. But when I take a look at the camera, you know, just pull the camera, all your life you've been protected, all your life you were okay. So this is where trust comes in, the third principle of money, EQ. You know, wow, I didn't know, you know, I'm being well protected all along. I thought I was alone, but I have many friends that I can rely on, and I have little money in the bank account, and I have a job. Wow, I think I'm a millionaire. So once you feel like you have more than enough, you feel relaxed, you can be more creative, you can get out of the survival mode. Unfortunately, so many of us are in a survival mode. When you're in a survival mode, it's like fight or flight. That's what gives you so much stress, and you cannot be creative. So you have to focus on the fact that you have more than enough. If you're watching this with your computer or your smartphone, you're wealthy, you know. Probably you have a bed somewhere if you go back home, right? So you're already well taken care of. Even if you have debt, don't worry about it. Debt is a trust that the banks placed on you. It's not a curse or burden. When you start changing all the interpretation of what's going on in your life, you feel much lighter. For example, talking about debt, a lot of people think it's so heavy. But think of it as a stranger's trust in you. They trust you that they will be financially okay for the next 20 years. That's why they give you a mortgage, right? So like, wow, thank you. Thank you for trusting me. I have a hard time trusting myself. But to appreciate your trust, I'll start paying the interest every month to show my appreciation for letting me use the house 20 years in advance because you trusted me. So once you feel, wow, this is not a burden or curse, it's a trust, then you feel lighter. And if you just start looking at money one by one that way, you're in a totally different world.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. It's all in the perspective. And when you shift that perspective, some magical things happen. So yes. I've got one question left for you today, Ken, before we part ways. But why don't you let people know, where can they get a copy of Happy Money? I couldn't recommend enough that you dive into Ken's work. But where can they follow you and how can they get in touch?
Thank you. You can Google Ken Honda. You'll probably find a lot of other YouTube videos. And if you come to kenhonda.com, I didn't touch about the money personality type. There are like spenders, money makers, warrior, and money in different hippies. You can check your money type in 5 minutes. It's free. So I'm translating a lot of fun stuff into English. So you can figure out those that kind of information there. And you can order my book from Amazon. You can get it in probably like 24 hours. And a lot of people listen to audiobook these days. Either way is fine. If you want to learn more, my second book is coming out. It's called True Wealth. It will come out in May from Hay House.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, Ken, thanks so much for joining us today. The last question I have is, what is your advice to all the people who are listening to the show? They're hearing you talk. They're hearing you say, I need to change my mindset around money. They recognize that they need to do it, but they still can't get themselves to take that action and make that change. Mm. What do you suggest they do?
Just enjoy money. You know, it's going to just stay in you for a while. Enjoy money. You can interpret it your own way. You know, money is for fun. You know, money is an angel waiting for you that's like, I want to do this. Okay. It could be your best friend. So enjoy money, enjoy life. You know, sometimes we have bad days, but it's okay. But I hope you enjoy your life more to the fullest. And money will be right there. Money can be your best friend.
Amazing. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope I get to hang out with you when I'm in Japan next. And appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you so much, Stephen, and all the viewers. I'm just sending lots of happy money to you.
Today's episode is sponsored by Von Finch Capital. If you're interested in investing alongside me in the same type of real estate opportunities that I personally invest in, then head over to Von Finch Capital and join their private investor network. You can do so at vonfinch.com/invest. Join me on that next deal, and I look forward to seeing you on the inside. Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Head over to theinvestormindset.com to join the Insider Club, where we share tools and strategies from the top investors and entrepreneurs on how to take it to the next level.